Hey guys, so this is the first chat about mental illness with Beyond the Bar. Today I have with me the poshest man from Essex,
Calm,
aka Jack Popak. Hello Jack.
Hi, how you doing mate? You
alright? I'm good, how are you?
Very well, thank you. How's the intro?
So I'm going to open with a question from my friend Tim Etherington Judge, who set up healthyhospo.com. Definitely a website well worth checking out and finding out about his story. And that is, what three things are you thankful for today?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Coming in hot with three things, eh?
Yeah, so wow. Like we did a talk in Nottingham back in the UK, and this is something that he'd ask himself each day and people, and it's just something nice to sort of start the day with.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's nothing too groundbreaking or revolutionary, to be honest with you. I mean, number one obviously has to be family. I've got very lucky to have loving parents who always support all my actions and decisions, and including, you know, when I just decided to become a bartender, they were there for me from day one, and I'm incredibly lucky that they're always around to support me whenever I need to. It's something I know not everyone has, whether it's from split parents or just from other difficulties, so I'm kind of blessed to have them every day. On a similar note, somehow I've managed to convince people I'm a decent enough person. I've got some decent friends.
60% of the time.
Yeah, another 40%. It's a bit touchy. But I'm very, very lucky and fortunate to have not only friends that's going to have a great time, but people I can talk about seriously as well. People that can call me out on my bullshit sometimes. And finally, man, I'm just... We're sitting here in New Zealand, like I said, I'm just a boy from Essex, not an Essex boy. Big difference.
Can't tell the Essex out.
So you know, I'm sitting on the other side of the world. It's the middle of summer in November, and it's you know, I'm lucky to have the opportunity to be able to do that, I guess.
Nice. That's good. I like
that. Nice start. Yeah. Ease into it, eh?
This chat is, and following chats will be about mental illness and well-being.
Yes.
And yeah, we just might as well get into it.
Go into the deep end, eh? Yeah, why not?
So, you told me you have depression and anxiety.
Correct, yes.
How long have you been dealing with this?
So, it's a tricky one to answer because there's a difference between diagnosed and between kind of retrospecting and looking at when I maybe should have started to seek some options and some help. Yeah. I'm diagnosed at 21 during my third year of university. If I think back to what I now know is probably unusual behaviours or unusual thought patterns, I can probably trace it until at least 16 years old, maybe 15 years old. So, I mean, yeah, we're talking, I'm 26 now, so 10, 11 years, a huge chunk of my life and my entire adult life, essentially. So yeah, and when that happens, it kind of becomes almost normal, you know, or it feels normal. It becomes my normal.
Yeah, it's an everyday thing for you, like same with anyone.
Whatever
they've got.
Absolutely.
You just.
Yeah. And it's just that there's not many things you remember about being 13, 14, 15 years old. It's so far along in the past. And so, in terms of functional working memory, it's almost my entire adult life, you know. So, yeah, at least 10 plus years, yeah.
That's long time.
Long enough, eh? Yeah.
How does this affect your day-to-day, both personal and at work?
So I think I'm very lucky to be in a space where, in terms of my personal journey, I've come quite a long way, even just from like a year ago. But every day presents some sort of challenge. So from the depression side of things, there's certainly, in the past, there's been periods of a week or 2 weeks or so where you barely leave your bed, or you stop showering, stop eating, you just can't bring yourself to do anything. And then in terms of anxiety, when you eventually get out of that space and manage to get out into the real world, you suddenly become very, very, very nervous and worried and panicked about some fairly everyday things. And I think one of the clearest examples I have is I generally it happens any time I have to make a phone call. I get a huge amount of anxiety just for no particular reason. It's something you... And I think a lot of the time you try and find explanations, but you can't, unfortunately. So it can be really simple, everyday things. It can be asking someone for directions, and you can't even do that, or whatever it might be. You know, there's every single day there are so many small actions that shouldn't cause any kind of panic or worry or anxiety at all. And so when you combine those two things together, it creates a number of different times over the course of a day where potentially disastrous things can happen within your own mind. When it comes to work, I tended to use my work as a bartender as an escape. I mean, certainly before I got into bartending, I had office jobs in London, and that very much exacerbated some of my anxieties in particular, because I wasn't enjoying my job at all. So every day became an incredibly hard struggle, and that overwhelming feeling of not being good enough or not being successful enough. I got out of that job fairly quickly. But hospitality gave me a chance, in a really negative way, to put a mask on. The entire industry for us is obviously it's serving people, and it's being a certain type of person. You know, if
100%
people listening to this, imagine if you're the person sitting on the sofa was the person that was behind the bar. You know, it's completely different.
Well, that's the thing, is that like us as hospitality workers, we make sure that our guests are having the best time possible.
Absolutely.
But we don't think about ourselves. 100%.
And it can be very difficult. It can either be difficult to take off that mask, or it can be, or conversely, saying the same thing in a different way. It can be easy to leave it on purpose, intentionally, because it helps to cover up some of the rougher edges that you may not want people to see necessarily. And I think that's the main difficulty in terms of how it affects your work life, is drawing that line between, you know, spending your entire working day looking after other people, and then taking that time outside of work and during work to look after yourself as well, and then to listen to yourself, because those messages for me got modeled very, very quickly. I think a lot of the time you see people and hear about people who pull in crazy hours per week at work, and I think we've all done it at some point. If you haven't, then you will. And there are some times where that's just people working really hard, and there are some times where that's people, you always kind of put yourself through it on intentionally, so you haven't got to deal with who you are outside of work. I know that's the space that I've been in personally, of just trying to work as much as possible so that I don't have to take the mask off. And trying to manage that and you know, trying to learn how to take the mask off, it's incredibly difficult. It's not something that comes easy for the people, especially when that image you're projecting out is so positive and something that you almost wish you were every day. Why would you stop? You know, that's some of the issues I had to deal with, particularly. Yeah.
So, what support, if any, do you get, whether it's professional, from friends, family?
I think importantly to point out, I guess, is that initially I didn't get any support, and it took me a good 4 or 5 years to start receiving support, and that's my diagnosis at 21. I think that's part of the reason that we're here, is to try and help people to get that access to help earlier. But certainly, when I was 21, I tried one session of therapy through a university doctor, and absolutely hated it. Couldn't stand it. Eventually decided to go down the medication route. I was taking medication for about 6 months or so. I should have continued taking it, but as things happen sometimes, I ended up getting a little bit ahead of myself, maybe, and starting to think perhaps that things were either working better than they should and I didn't need medication, or that actually it wasn't helping at all, and fuck this, essentially. And so then, by the time I came to the age of 22, I didn't receive much help at all for another 3 years or so after that. I think, again, it's important for people to understand that that's part of your journey sometimes, and that, you know, the first time you seek help isn't necessarily the be-all and end-all. You know, it didn't work for me at first. And I ended up going through various different phases of being in good periods, maybe up to 2 months, 3 months at a time, and then being in really, really nasty places for you know, again, months at a time again there. And I kind of cycle through these over a period of a few years. And eventually it came to about, I'd say, 9 months ago now, where after a couple of events happened in personal life and after kind of doing a little bit more introspection and with the advice and the help of a couple of close friends as well, I decided maybe it was time to give therapy a chance again. You know, I found myself at 25 years old, in a very, very different place to 4 years ago when I was first diagnosed. And that has been an absolute lifesaver for me, potentially, literally, not just metaphorically. I've managed to find myself a fantastic counsellor here in New Zealand, and she has helped me to no end. It's one of these things where, again, and now I'm at the place now where I'm not currently taking medication. It's something I've thought about and I'm toying with. It's something I'm kind of constantly assessing as something that may or may not be an option moving forward. This sort of second cycle around, I've been in fairly regular therapy for the last 9 months or so, made quite a significant amount of progress, which is pretty bizarre to be able to even be in a position where I can say that about myself.
How often do you get...
I'd say it wasn't in the offset, it was kind of every 2 weeks for a couple of months, and then I used it as a reactionary device for a while, and more recently, after again a couple of events happened, I kind of started, it's more like a, want to be 3 weeks now for a couple of months again as well. It's one of those things that I probably if I could go back and do that actually again, I probably would carry on in regular therapy, even if I had a period of feeling a little bit better and a little bit more confident, maybe. Because it shouldn't always be reactionary, it should be a proactive endeavor as well, you know. And then I think through therapy, it's allowed me to actually access more support from the people I see every day. So in particular, my friends down in New Zealand. The more I've been able to make progress through my therapist, it's been able to allow me to, I guess, ask for a bit more help or make people aware of what I'm going through more in my day-to-day life as well. And without getting that access to therapy in the first place, it's something I probably would have kept hidden from a lot of people or sort of been less open about.
What people do.
Yeah, absolutely.
People don't talk.
No, 100%. And again, this is the entire purpose of what we're doing, I guess, my man. it's important to the people who are aware of it, whether it's friends or employers or managers, whatever it is. It's a part of your life. It's part of who you are, and it's that's something that, yeah, it'd be nice to see more people reaching that point earlier on in their process. You know, because it's something that, again, I say, it took me 10 years, 11 years to get to a point where I can even talk about it, let alone be fully in control of it. And then I think that the culmination of that journey over the past nearly year or so now actually results in me kind of telling my parents about it for the first time ever about a week ago now, actually, a week and a half ago. And that was a huge significant step. And then I'm not going to lie to anyone, the conversation sucked. It was fucking horrid. Mum and Dad are probably listening at some point. I love you very much, and you guys are absolute champions, because you, again, were just incredibly supportive of me telling you that, which was so important. And it's not an easy thing to do, but I think, again, it's necessary, and it's going to help me in the long term moving forward to have another access to other avenues of support through them as well. I was never ready to share that with them until this point very recently, and part of that is because of the nature of the beast itself. You don't want to burden people with what's going on with you. You don't want to you feel like you're putting it on people, but in actual fact, you know, the people that care about you are there for you unreservedly no matter what. And that's not everyone. You know, it's not every person you meet that is going to be the person you speak to about everything in your life, but there'll be a handful of people that are they care about you a lot and they're super close to you, and having them able to support you as well is a massive difference. You know, it's not easy, and you know, it's not something everyone listening to this who may be struggling is ready to do right now, but it's something that's going to be available to you in the future, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
I think that's the key point, eh? Yeah, everyone's at different points in their journeys. And eventually, you know, you carry on putting the work in and being honest with yourself, and people will get to that point. Yeah.
Nice. So you recently got a tattoo?
I did, yeah, yeah.
Do you want to explain why?
Yes, yeah. So on my left forearm, it's a tattoo of a... It's like an anatomical textbook illustration style drawing of the human brain.
Yeah, right, yeah. That's awesome.
Everyone on the podcast can see this beautifully. obviously, having a tattoo of the brain is symbolic for me and my journey of mental health, but... the significance is that it's actually placed underneath the scar on my left forearm, which was self-inflicted about 6 months ago or so. It's something. Self-harm, self-inflicted pain has been a part of my life and a part of my journey. For me personally, it was an idea of self-punishment for perceived mistakes or perceived inadequacies or however you want to put it. But it was very much this idea that I should be better than I was, or I should have made more progress than I was making, or you know, and that can be really toxic in your own mind. The tattoo kind of sits neatly underneath the scar. It was my first step in essentially, you know, quote unquote, coming out about mental health, and then and putting it into a public forum, saying to people, hey, you know, this is part of my life, and it's time to stop sweeping it under the rug, and time to accept that this is part of me. And again, that's not a point that everyone will be at straight away. It takes years and years. It takes time, and you can only do it at your own pace. There's certainly no pressure to get to that point. I think sometimes people think that they should be at a certain point in their progression, or they should be owning their stuff. And it's completely personal to each individual person.
It's a good spot to have it, because when you're working,
yes,
it's always visible.
It's there, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's there. It's people who don't necessarily know all about me will ask about it, and it's a chance for me to say, hey, it's symbolic of my journey of mental health, and people kind of say, oh shit, you know, it's in places you might not expect. And I think particularly, like we were saying earlier on the bar, when you are wearing those masks, and it's actually still a kind of poignant reminder to me that, you know, to take the mask off when you need to, or the mask doesn't need to always be there, you know. It's that reminder to look after the most important thing, and that's it. And I think I firmly believe that your own brain is the most important thing in your own life. You know what I mean? It controls your entire reality.
It's also difficult to control at times.
Very difficult to control. Yeah, yeah. It will control you, but you can't control it. And that's the trick, you know.
Yeah.
And something we've probably not mentioned yet so far, actually, is my journey with contact sports and concussions. I had my first concussion when I was 14 or 15 years old, and then by the time I finished playing around 21, which was just before I started to get some help with my mental health, I was up to somewhere between 20 and 25 concussions, which is dumb. I mean, it's just straight up, it's dumb.
It makes a lot of sense.
Oh, hugely so, and certainly it'd be more alarming if there wasn't a connection than if there was. You know, apparently, you know, minor brain injuries on a regular basis aren't good for your brain, apparently, you know.
Who'd have thought?
If only someone had told me, you know. But no, it's a difficult thing to give up, because at the time, playing sports was another outlet for me. It was a chance to focus on something else and get away from all the thoughts in your head. But actually, that was the thing that was causing a lot of my issues at the time, to be honest. And, you know, it's... Yeah, the brain tattoo itself is just that constant everyday reminder. I see it every day, and it just kind of says to me, hey, look after yourself. Like, you know, you see what can go wrong if you don't put the work in. And I think it's intimidating, but it's an everyday effort, you know what I mean? It's not a point where being in a good state of mind is second nature. It's like, no, it's every day, man. Every day you've got to work hard for it, and things will catch you off guard. And it's having the tools and the system and the process in place to be able to manage that. And it's not going to go away anytime soon. You know, it's just a case of can you manage it? Can you control which elements of your brain you're listening to? And you know, it's a difficult process, and things are going to test me all the time. And for me, I want that constant reminder of just like, okay, breathe in, breathe out, think about the progress you made, think about the systems you have in place, and we can prevent any more scars, hopefully. Yeah.
Nice. That's very informative.
Like that. I'm a chatterbox, you know me. Yeah. now the cat's out of the bag, I can't shut up. Yeah.
So, leading on to the last question, do you have any advice for people dealing with similar issues? Or also tying into that, what helps you feel better?
I think, from an advice point of view, the most difficult thing for me was step one, which was acknowledgement. You know, and it's not easy to do. I think we all go through these periods of time where it's like, yeah. What if it's just me? You know, what if everyone's like this and I'm just not handling it very well? You know what I mean? What if this happens to everyone? And it's not an easy process to go through because you don't know the answer, and no one's there to tell you the answer because, again, everyone's journey is individual. You know, the way that my depression and anxiety will manifest itself is not the same to the way that anyone else's will. It's difficult to be honest with yourself and to step back and say, hey, you know, even if it's what's normal for you, it's actually not the way things have to be. And certainly I made plenty of excuses to justify things in my life, and you know, things like the kind of self-harm aspects. You know, I made excuses to myself to justify it, and you have to be brutally honest with yourself and say, hey, you know, I don't want to be like this, or you know, this doesn't have to be me. I guess my advice is just, is surround yourself with good people that look out for you. Not everyone who thinks your best mate is actually going to be there through thick and thin. And it's a sad thing to say, but we've all had that one person that you thought was in your life and then suddenly wasn't. I think it's the big thing is to try to break down that stigma around admitting you might have a mental health issue or mental illness, and breaking down the stigma around asking for help. And you know, it's our collective responsibility to break that down. You know, even as someone, if you're listening and something doesn't affect you, it affects someone in your life for 100%. And it's about being there to listen and support, and to notice notice the cries for help, because we all do it, and you're hoping someone listens. Once you take that first big step, it is a massive step. That's when you can start looking more into, hey, you know, how can I get help and support? Because there's always an option. You can always figure something out. Whether it's a therapy route, like help me, or whether it's a medication route, just help people in my life. There's always an option to go down. There's always some kind of help and support available, and you're never alone in that. You know, there's always a person, either personal or professional, who is around to help you and support you. And you'll feel lonely at some point, but you're not alone. And I think that's a really important message, is that you know, life doesn't stop or just cease to continue, or even things aren't over once you admit you have a mental health issue. Once you do admit it, it's like, right, I can, how can I move forward and approach this in such a way that I can start to get better. And I think the other piece of advice maybe I'd give is that there's plenty of hurdles along the way, and I think I kind of mentioned, you know, my first attempt at tackling my issues didn't work at all, and it took me a long time to recover. I think hopefully the purpose of doing things like this podcast, for example, is to try and reduce the amount of time it takes people to either recover from hiccups or to access help in the first place. But you know, it's not all sunshine and rainbows. As soon as you start getting help, it's really, really tough. And it's an everyday job. And there are people who have very different journeys to you, but everyone's journey is unique and different, and there's not a blueprint, you know.
Exactly, like someone else might be the same as you, but they deal with it differently, or they have different symptoms,
and you have to go through processes to figure out what is gonna help you and work for you, and there's no one else that can tell you that apart from yourself, and it's really, really intimidating and scary. But you just have to, you know, keep on pushing on and just trust the process. It will get better. Yeah. Take home message. It will get better.
Also, it's okay not to be okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If you're feeling like shit, you feel like shit.
It happens that there are bad days, and then there are days where you feel like, hey, you know what? Actually, I don't want to speak to anyone today. I'm gonna stay at home and I'm gonna just lounge out and take a me day. And you know what? The trick there is, don't forget to give yourself credit for little victories. Getting out of bed, that's a victory sometimes, you know. And it's nothing to be sniffed at. It's let's say taking a.
Wait, I'm gonna drink.
Let's say taking a shower. That can be a victory some days. Having a meal, that can be a victory some days. There's nothing wrong with being in that space for a short amount of time, half a day or a day. When it becomes habitual, that's when you start to see long-term issues, and that's when you might need a little bit of help being pulled out of that space. But I think a lot of the time, little victories we don't give ourselves credit for. If sometimes walking out the front door, man, that's a good feeling, that can be a really good feeling. You're like, fuck, I made it to the front door. There are days where that's going to be your win, and you just give yourself credit for that, because in your head you know how easy it would be to just lie in bed all day, not eat, not shower, do nothing, and just rot away almost. So yeah, there are days, like you say, where it's going to be difficult, it's going to feel shitty, and maybe you don't go out and start changing the world, but actually the little victories during the day are enough to keep you going. Give yourself credit for those.
Yeah, definitely. I like that. All right, well, thank you, Jack.
Hey, thank you, mate. Thank you. I appreciate you organising, mate.
All good. Jack works at Crumpet, which is a wicked little cocktail bar next to the Opera House on Manor Street. We've done this talk over at Fortune Favours. It's a great craft beer bar. Give us a follow on Instagram at beyond.the.bar for more podcasts and profiling hospitality workers.
Thank you very much, bro. Appreciate you having me. It's nice to be a part of it, and hopefully we can keep on reaching out to a few more people.
Sounds like a plan. Cheers, guys. Bye.